saying, "Keep silent, keep silent. You are deafening me with your voices." That's it. Their sound went out unto the ends of the universe. So you see that the rational creation with a rational creation glorifies God in a co-harmony, perfect harmony. Now, someone may ask, then why don't we introduce instrumental music in our worship? Why? So why do we not have instruments in our worship? Just precisely as the Old Testament uses instruments in worship and the Roman Catholics and the Protestants. Well, this is a topic which lately has become very prevalent. For this reason, some churches in Athens and elsewhere attempted to introduce instruments. They tried the introduction of organs. I would like to tell you the following, my friends, that the Orthodox Church never introduced instruments or organs, despite the fact that in the Old Testament they exist, and for so much time now I'm explaining it to you, and despite the fact that we would still have this image in Revelation. The reason is the following. Instrumental music slips into femalism, and femalism refers to the operatic sounds of the theater. Consequently, instrumental music, when we say that it slides towards femalism, it means towards theatricalness, towards a theater. And consequently, the form of divine worship is distorted. Do you want proof? The music of the West, which is none other than what we hear from the radio as the so-called classical music, which the various great composers, all in all, very notable from the viewpoint of artistic skill, very noteworthy in all, what they have written is so secular that someone who begins to live the divine worship in the frame of the Orthodox form sincerely reaches a point of being disgusted. Not only does he feel that it is inadequate, but he reaches the point of being disgusted. My friends, I will not hide to you a personal experience of mine. I used to love classical music. I loved it very much. Today, I find it very much inadequate. I have no desire to listen to it. I don't want to say that I would never want to hear something, but I don't really care to listen to it. The so-called classical music, classical religious music of Bach or Palestrina, but I don't know of some others who have written liturgies of Mendelssohn, etc. Whatever, and whoever has written beautiful masterpieces, wonderful oratories, it is femalism, theater. Nothing but theater, with the sopranos and altos and baritones, etc. Theater, plain theatrics, and a man's soul which begins to understand and to become full of contrition from the mystery of love of God and of worship becomes allergic to this type of music. He no longer wants it. I hope that some of you understand me with these things I'm telling you. Perhaps not everyone. But even in the music and in the vocal music, I must tell you that there exists this danger of slipping. Which danger? The music becoming a goal in itself. And the standard vocal music, what we call Byzantine music, of becoming a goal in itself and not becoming a means for the elevation of the faithful. Because many times we go to listen to music, to enjoy the chanter, to enjoy the music. I will tell you that once a master chanter, I won't say his name naturally, once he was chanting in a church of Athens, and this goes back many, many years, and he was invited to chant because he had exceptional skill. He chanted well, extremely well, and chanted with all the masterfulness of a Byzantine chanter, in which case a voice from down in the congregation was heard saying, "Aman my pasa." If we reach, my beloved, to say in worship about the chanter, "Aman my pasa," it means, forgive me, I will tell you to understand, it means that this person did not become full of contrition religiously, but he just got excited, he got stirred up. This is language used in these secular nightclubs. So if he reaches a point of having our senses excited, get all excited in worship, then we don't have worship. I believe that I'm clear. There is the Synod in Truro with its 75th canon, which tells us the following. And I insist on this because all these things are ready to be introduced into our worship. So we should have some knowledge. And I quote from the 75th canon, "Those who chant, let them chant with much attention and contrition, not using unruly and unsuitable cries." St. Nicodemus the Hagarite interprets in the Rhetor and says the following, and I'll read you an excerpt of the interpretation. "What are the unsuitable things in the church?" The interpreter Zonaras answers that they are the womanly melodies and minerismata, or lamenting cries, the mourning, that is, the multiple telerem, and the excessive variety of melodies which interrelate with fornicative songs. And when we say fornicative songs, we mean the contemporary spirit of the theater-like atmosphere which excites the senses. Therefore, all these, the present canon orders not to be in the church, and those chanting should offer the chants with much attention to God, who sees into the secret places of the heart, that is, in the noetic chanting and prayer done in the heart, rather than in external cries. This is what St. Nicodemus says about chanting. The elders, or the presbyters, along with the guitars, also have golden vials full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. The Protestants and the Jehovah's Witnesses accuse us of idolatry, being that we worship with candles and we use incense. If you ever come into some conversation with a Jehovah's Witness, he will tell you that, why do you use incense, etc. Aside from the fact that incense is used in the old worship at God's command, not to mention that God himself gives the recipe for how the incense will be made. He says, out of four aromatic materials, in a mixture of 25%, he gives specifics on how to make incense. And he says, pay attention to this, you will use it only for my worship, and you will not make it to use it in your own house. And anyone doing so would be punished by death. So aside from the fact that incense was used in the Old Testament, and regardless if the idol worshippers used it as well, it doesn't matter, does not mean that this is idol worship because the idol worshippers used it as well. It is also used in the new worship, that is, in the New Testament. And this is shown here in the book of the Revelation in a wondrous way. What does it say? It says that they held golden censers full of incense. The censers are golden. Here, the need for a luxury prevails so that the lofty worship of God may be accentuated. They are not holding a single clay pot, not even one, nor a tin can to sense. I will say it once again, so that the high and lofty worship of God may be accentuated here. All this to show that the worship of God must be maintained on a high level, on a pedestal. Furthermore, the phenomenon of incense with the elevated smokes is that symbol of prayer rising to the throne of God. The 140th Psalm, verse 2, says, "Let my prayer arise before you as incense. Let my prayer be directed as incense before you." Here, in this case, in this image of Revelations, the sacred evangelist notes that the incenses are the prayers of the saints. To begin with, we must note the interpretation which the sacred evangelist offers by telling us in the book of the Revelations that incenses are the prayers of the saints. And please pay attention. The sacred evangelist himself spells this out. In the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell before the Lamb, each holding a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. This action of receiving the book on a part of the Lamb is considered a worldwide historical event, and for this reason, it also brings forth the worship of the angelic world and of the saints. The entire scene is characterized as a liturgy in heaven in all its heavenly majesty. So the angelic world worships the Lamb. It clearly worships the Lamb, certainly. But two questions arise. How would angels worship a man, Jesus Christ, if he were not only a man, but a God-man? And again, how would people worship Christ if he were an incarnated angel, as the Jehovah Witnesses say? They claim that he's the incarnation of the Archangel Michael, or even a first created being. How could they ever worship a creation? This would not be possible. So think that when the sacred evangelist falls, it is in the chapters farther down, in the 19th chapter, he falls down to worship the angel who leads them, and he interprets the various visionary images. The angel tells him, look, don't, be careful. Do not fall down. I am your advisor. I am a servant together with you before God, etc. Worship God. Now, how would the angels worship all the angels, as we will see farther down, myriads and thousands upon thousands? But now here we see only this image because this image is constantly being added to. The more it proceeds, the more it goes on, the more the unraveling of the events proceeds with this image as the background of the heavenly liturgy. It is constantly being enriched. Thus we see here, my friends, that in this richness, the myriads of angels appear to worship Jesus Christ, the Lamb, the slain Lamb Christ. And now we see only the four animals, that is the cherubim and the seraphim. How do they worship and why? It is known that the Apostle Paul notes in his epistle to the Hebrews the following. He says in the first chapter, and this is very characteristic, and please remember these verses between 4 and 8. Having become so much better than the angels, who, Jesus Christ, having become so much greater and better and higher than the angels, as much as he inherited from them a more excellent name. This shows from his name. For which of the angels did he say to, you are my child, today I gave birth to you? And when he again introduces the firstborn to the world, firstborn, not first created, who is the Son of God, the second person of the Holy Trinity, it says, and all the angels of God shall worship him. If it were the Archangel Michael, would the other angels worship the Archangel Michael? Why would they? Well, to the angels, he says, he who makes his angels spirits and his ministers flames of fire. That is spirits. He who makes, who constructs the angels. In other words, the angels are creatures. While to the Son of God, he says, the Son, your throne, O God, unto the ages of ages. That, O God, is not nominative, but it is vocative. That is, your throne, O God, unto the ages of ages. So how does he call the Son? God. So the Son is God. The slain Lamb is the historical Jesus. He's the incarnated Son of God. He's God himself. I will say it once more, and I know I keep harping on this, but where are the Jehovah Witnesses who lowered Jesus Christ to the level of the creation, or even, if you will, all the modern-day Arianizers? It is not in vain, my friends, that the church today celebrates the memory of the 318 God-bearing fathers of the First Ecumenical Synod. This is precisely the purpose. The Feast of the Fathers of this Synod is to show that in every age, the church slams Arianism. It also means that in every age, you have the existence of Arianizers. And they also exist in our age. Arianism is when you deny the divine nature of Christ. When you say that Christ is a good person, a sociologist, a philosopher, an important man, even in the best version, an angel who became man, you are Arianizing. And this is Arianizing in its crudest form. Because let's not forget that there also existed semi-Arianizers in Arius's age. But here, this is great and crude Arianism. And Arianism exists always. It will always exist. It is the dogma of the Antichrist, that Christ is not God, that he's a creature. It is the position of the Antichrist. For this reason, the evangelist John also says that he who denies that the Son is God and became man, he is the Antichrist. However, as we see from the image of Revelations, not only the angels, the four animals, that is the cherubim and the seraphim, worship the Lamb, but also the 24 presbyters, that is the whole church. We will see this extensively in our chapters further on. At the time of the worshiping, only the 24 presbyters held a guitar and a golden censer full of incense. A golden censer, a golden vial. A vial does not mean that it is always something which reminds one of a bottle. It is a vessel. The guitar, again, as you can see, they hold a guitar. You also hold the vessel of the incenses, and the guitar is the instrument which accompanies the Psalms. In the Old Testament, we read in the 32nd Psalm, confess the Lord in guitar. Confess means I glorify. Glorify God in instruments, instrumentally with a guitar, without excluding singing and to simply have the instrument accompany the voice. And consequently, here the guitar would accompany the ode which the presbyters would be chanting before the one sitting on the throne and before the Lamb. The guitar, my friends, is the symbol of the irrational creation glorifying God, because it is an irrational thing. What is the guitar? It's an instrument. It is comprised of wood, of metallic cords, or nerves, of intestines, of animals, etc. Nevertheless, it is an irrational thing. So the guitar is the symbol of the irrational creation glorifying the Creator. We will see this farther down. And this, again, simply symbolizes and accompanies the glorification of rational creation. What is the glorifying of the rational creation? That of the 24 presbyters. We are the rational creation, the logical creation. So when we hymn God and our hymning is accompanied with music, it means that both the irrational and the rational creation glorifies God. The 18th Psalm says in verse 5, unto all the earth their sound went, and unto the ends of the world their words. Εις πάσαν τη γη εξήλθεν ο φθόγκος αυτών και εις τα πέρατα της οικουμένης τα ρήματα αυτών. Now, when St. Paul uses this in Romans, It speaks about the apostles, but in Psalm 18, it does not refer to the apostles. Not that it is a bad interpretation, no, but it refers to the creatures. Do you know? To the stones, to the grass, to the flowers, the heavenly bodies everywhere. Their sound went out unto all the earth. In simple terms, all creation speaks, and it glorifies God. How do all the creatures glorify God? With their own presence, with the wisdom with which they are made. Everything shows their glorification to God. Once Linnaeus, Father Linnaeus, the father of botany, was walking in the field and had his cane, and he was a very faithful person and a great scholar. He felt that everything was offering their sacrifice, their love, their glorification to God. And he lightly was hitting the grass and the flowers, the daisies and the chamomile with his cane. And he was saying, keep silent, keep silent. You are deafening me with your voices. That's it. Their sound went out unto the ends of the universe. So you see that the rational creation with a rational creation glorifies God in a co-harmony, perfect harmony. Now, someone may ask, then why don't we introduce instrumental music in our worship? Why? So why do we not have instruments in our worship? Just precisely as the Old Testament uses instruments in worship and the Roman Catholics and the Protestants. Well, this is a topic which lately has become very prevalent. For this reason, some churches in Athens and elsewhere attempted to introduce instruments. They tried the introduction of organs. I would like to tell you the following, my friends, that the Orthodox Church never introduced instruments or organs, despite the fact that in the Old Testament they exist. And for so much time now, I'm explaining it to you, and despite the fact that we would still have this image in Revelation, the reason is the following. Instrumental music slips into familism. And familism refers to the operatic sounds of the theater. Consequently, instrumental music, when we say that it slides towards familism, it means towards theatricalness, towards a theater. And consequently, the form of divine worship is distorted. Do you want proof? The music of the West, which is none other than what we hear from the radio as the so-called classical music, which the various great composers, all in all, very notable from the viewpoint of artistic skill, very noteworthy in all, what they have written is so secular that someone who begins to live the divine worship in the frame of the Orthodox form sincerely reaches a point of being disgusted. Not only does he feel that it is inadequate, but he reaches the point of being disgusted. My friends, I will not hide to you a personal experience of mine. I used to love classical music. I loved it very much. Today, I find it very much inadequate. I have no desire to listen to it. I don't want to say that I would never want to hear something, but I don't really care to listen to it. The so-called classical music, classical religious music of Bach or of Palestrina, but I don't know of some others who have written liturgies of Mendelssohn, etc. Whatever, and whoever has written beautiful masterpieces, wonderful oratories, it is familism, theater, nothing but theater, with the sopranos and altos and baritones, etc. Theater, plain theatrics, and a man's soul which begins to understand and to become full of contrition from the mystery of love of God and of worship becomes allergic to this type of music. He no longer wants it. I hope that some of you understand me with these things I'm telling you. Perhaps not everyone. But even in the music and in the vocal music, I must tell you that there exists this danger of slipping. Which danger? The music becoming a goal in itself. and the standard vocal music, what we call Byzantine music, of becoming a goal in itself and not becoming a means for the elevation of the faithful. Because many times we go to listen to music, to enjoy the chanter, to enjoy the music. I will tell you that once a master chanter, I won't say his name naturally, once he was chanting in a church of Athens, and this goes back many, many years, and he was invited to chant because he had exceptional skill. He chanted well, extremely well, and chanted with all the masterfulness of a Byzantine chanter, in which case a voice from down in the congregation was heard saying, "Aman my pasa." If we reach my beloved to say in worship about the chanter, "Aman my pasa," it means, forgive me, I will tell you to understand, it means that this person did not become full of contrition religiously, but he just got excited, he got stirred up. This is language used in these secular nightclubs. So if he reaches a point of having our senses excited, get it all excited in worship, then we don't have worship. I believe that I'm clear. There is the Synod in Trullo with its 75th canon, which tells us the following. And I insist on this because all these things are ready to be introduced into our worship. So we should have some knowledge. And I quote from the 75th canon, "Those who chant, let them chant with much attention and contrition, not using unruly and unsuitable cries." St. Nicodemus the Hagarite interprets in the Rhetor and says the following, and I'll read you an excerpt of the interpretation. "What are the unsuitable things in the church?" The interpreter Zonaras answers that they are the womanly melodies and minirismata, or lamenting cries, the mourning, that is, the multiple telirem, and the excessive variety of melodies which interrelate with fornicative songs. And when we say fornicative songs, we mean the contemporary spirit of the theater-like atmosphere which excites the senses. Therefore, all these, the present canon orders not to be in the church, and those chanting should offer the chants with much attention to God, who sees into the secret places of the heart, that is, in the noetic chanting and prayer done in the heart, rather than in external cries. This is what St. Nicodemus says about chanting. The elders, or the presbyters, along with the guitars, also had golden vials full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. The Protestants and the Jehovah's Witnesses accuse us of idolatry, being that we worship with candles and we use incense. If you ever come into some conversation with a Jehovah's Witness, he will tell you that, "Why do you use incense?" etc. Aside from the fact that incense is used in the old worship at God's command, not to mention that God himself gives the recipe for how the incense will be made. He says, out of four aromatic materials in a mixture of 25%, he gives specifics on how to make incense. And he says, "Pay attention to this, you will use it only for my worship, and you will not make it to use it in your own house, and anyone doing so would be punished by death." So aside from the fact that incense was used in the Old Testament, and regardless if the idol worshippers used it as well, it doesn't matter, does not mean that this is idol worship because the idol worshippers used it as well. It is also used in the new worship, that is, in the New Testament. And this is shown here in the book of the Revelation in a wondrous way. What does it say? It says that they held golden censers full of incense. The censers are golden. Here the need for a luxury prevails so that the lofty worship of God may be accentuated. They are not holding a single clay pot, not even one, nor a tin can, 2 cents. I will say it once again, so that the high and lofty worship of God may be accentuated here. All this to show that the worship of God must be maintained on a high level, on a pedestal. Furthermore, the phenomenon of incense with the elevated smokes is that symbol of prayer rising to the throne of God. The 140th Psalm, verse 2 says, "Let my prayer arise before you as incense. Let my prayer be directed as incense before you." Here, in this case, in this image of Revelations, the sacred evangelist notes that the incenses are the prayers of the saints. To begin with, we must note the interpretation which the sacred evangelist offers by telling us in the book of the Revelations that incenses are the prayers of the saints. And please pay attention. The sacred evangelist himself spells this out.